everyone. It's Sarah. Surprise, surprise. This out of nowhere episode is a result of a topic that was sparked in my Instagram stories. But don't worry, before you picture chickens, cockroaches, or frankincense, just know that none of those will be included. And if you have no idea what the heck I'm talking about, I don't know whether to say you're missing out or congratulations, I'm happy for you. But a little bit of housekeeping needs to happen before I explain today's episode, just to give you a bit of a broader update. Starting back in January of this year, I decided I had to put regular podcast episodes on hold because I needed to make writing my book my main focus. And now that my son is a few months old, which is still, that's weird to just casually throw out my son, but now that my son is a few months old and the roughest part of postpartum and a fun little surgery is behind me, I've been really trying to get serious about my autoimmune stuff going on and do everything I can to get it fully in remission. It was up and down for a little while, but I think we're on a good track. I'll know more here in a few weeks. So between my health, a baby, a lot of upcoming travel, and my own projects, I had to slow down whatever I could. Now, this doesn't mean there aren't going to be any episodes in the near future. If something comes up, or if I want to chat about my book process or expand on a story from it, I'm definitely going to drop an episode. Okay, on to this episode. So here and there, I'll get messages on Instagram asking about what my life was like being single into my 30s and how I handled it. Not that I think I have anything especially profound to say in that area because I think it's messy for everyone. Everyone is really just flying through life by the seat of their pants. But I finally decided to post a poll and ask if this was worth having a whole podcast conversation about. And apparently it really, really is, especially for the Christian community. This is way too big of a topic for me to take on alone. And it just so happens that, like many of us, I have quite a few friends who know exactly what it's like to be single a little later in life. And they're also strong, very wise, very seasoned, and they're Christians. But I wouldn't say this episode is just for someone who is currently single, a Christian, maybe not thrilled about being single. I definitely think it could be helpful for married people when it comes to supporting their single friends or for parents with kids who are dating or will be dating soon. Just some different ways to approach it. We talk about how the church handles singleness, things that they're doing right now, things that they could be doing differently. We talked about our introductions to dating when we were younger and how we think those subliminal messages or what we were taught affected our experiences in the future. You'll also notice that a couple of times in our conversation, we reference a previous conversation, and that's because we talked about this before we recorded so that I could beg them to join me. I mean, get their thoughts about joining me for this. I think you're really going to appreciate how raw and honest my friends Karen and Serenity are. In the end, I just hope our conversation gives you a little boost of whatever you needed when it comes to this part of life. I have never had a conversation with my two real life friends on this recording. So I'm trying to figure out how to intro everybody into this in a normal way that makes sense. So Serenity, would you mind introducing yourself first?
Yeah. So, hey, I definitely know the two of you. You guys are quite a bit younger than me. I'm 47, going to be 48, and have gotten to see your guys' journey over the last like 7-8 years with dating. Me personally was married super young, 20 years old, grew up in church, did everything the right way, and that didn't work out. And then was single for quite a while, dated again, got married to another Christian man who was a narcissistic, abusive husband. So there was a whole lot that came with that. And I think that's kind of how I started really getting to know you, Sarah, is I remember talking to you about that way long ago because you and Karen know each other and I knew you guys together. And so talking about that and just the difficulty of divorce, so twice, and then being in 32 to 42 and dating in your singles when you're older and later in life is definitely challenging, and divorced and had been divorced a couple times with no kids, and then found, you know, the right one.
It sounds like we could have a whole separate episode.
Yeah. your life. That other subject. Yeah.
Yeah, that goes without saying. Karen, how about you?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Karen. I am 36 years old, and Sarah and I used to be roommates back in the day. So we've known each other for almost like 10 years now, I think. 9 or 10 years. So I'm excited to be a part of this conversation because I am still single, 36, grew up in the church, and really been dating more consistently since like my late 20s. But there's just a lot to talk about how to date well, how to be single well, and what that looks like, still carrying faith and being a part of the church as well.
I started to contemplate having an episode like this just myself, thinking this is a massive topic. And I was polling people on Instagram and getting so much input. And I sat down to take some notes thinking, okay, obviously this needs to be talked about. So I started taking notes and I was writing and writing and writing. And I stopped and went, I can't do this. I have the perfect friends. We probably could have sat down with at least 8 to 10 of us easy. Yeah. And had this conversation because and I know other people can relate, we know so many, it's not just women, men too, but personally, I think we can name tons of strong, quality, very well-established single women that feel like there is no one. And yeah. Here we are, you know, getting in our 30s and 40s, and we've been doing all of the right things. I say we, I mean, I am now married. I met Kirk at 33. So many of us have been doing the right things, but it's not happening. And so how do we deal with that?
The continuing theme, I think, that's so interesting, being that, again, I'm a little bit later in life than you guys, is just I knew at that time when I was single in my 30s, there wasn't a lot of people to dialogue about it with because the majority of my friends were married. And then, you know, even now listening to some of my single girlfriends, there's just not a place, a safe place, a platform for Christian, you know, believers, people, Christ followers, whatever you want to call yourself, to talk about dating and how hard that is in this day and age and the world that we live in and how things are changing, you know, rapidly, even from 6 years ago, since when I got married. So to have a safe place where people just feel heard and seen and can relate, the church isn't providing that, unfortunately.
No, while you're saying that, what I was thinking is, yeah, when you're mentioning a comfortable or a safe place to talk about it, there are lots of married people, and there is, I'm sure there's wisdom and encouragement they can provide, but it just comes from a different place. And so mm-hmm. many people, often I've received this response many times, they lace into the conversation, don't worry, he's coming soon, or yeah. Are you seeing anybody? And I, no, you know, back in the day, and so many times the response would be, oh, don't worry, honey, someone's going to snatch you up real quick, you know, or something like that. Or they would imply that each day I wake up pining is today the day. And I felt awkward responding with, I'm good. Honestly, it hadn't occurred to me today that I was single. I just woke up and went about my life, but you sound kind of silly.
Sickness, not sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in my experience growing up, there was so much, and other people have said this too, there was so much idolization around when you will get married, who you will be married to, or the partner you are becoming. So when you are single, you're not just single, you are preparing for, you know, that day. So, and I don't even remember if it was worded exactly like that, but somehow that was the message I received. And I think almost all of my friends that grew up in church received. So I would spend months and years just waiting for the day, basically. What can I do now that will prepare me better for that day?
Yeah. And I think that's not something that I was taught necessarily from a young age, but I think it is something that was picked up from, and part of it might have been like our parents' generation as well. They got married a lot younger, and it was almost like this is the idea of how your life is supposed to go. I was never personally, growing up in the church and just with my family dynamic and things, never saw another example of what life could look like. And so it did feel that marriage was the goal. And once you get married, you get to step into other things in life. That's the doorway that you walk through into adulthood, into...
Or when your life really gets to start.
Yeah. When your life gets to start. And it honestly wasn't until like my late 20s that I started learning that, oh, I can be who I want to be now. I can pursue the things that are on my heart to pursue now. Like, I don't have to wait. And it's a whole journey of like unraveling these old mindsets or these old things that, you know, I know everybody has a different story with like what they learned in the church. And I don't feel like I had a very strict, super conservative church upbringing, But there are all these subtle messages that, especially if you're a rule follower, which I am, as a rule follower, I was like, I'm supposed to wait. I'm not supposed to pursue. I'm supposed to just let him come to me. And the older you get and the more you learn, I'm like, that is not how this works.
It's such an underlying message, like so much in life, like you'll be happy when. You'll be happy when. And we know that to not be true. I mean, the weight of that can't be dependent upon a spouse, having children, all these milestones in life, these markers, you know, because I think, unfortunately, that's a lot of the dialogue that we've grown up or been around. And like you said, Karen, the generation, you know, our parents before us, that was, but things have changed and people aren't getting married so young and people are doing life different and pursuing careers and maybe having kids or adopting or not, or, you know, whatever that looks like. Like, it looks a lot different than it did for our parents, for sure.
Yeah. And the whole idea of preparing, having your single years be the years that you're preparing and like bettering yourself is such a mind game, because I'm like, would think, well, am I like not doing something right? Am I missing like a really big part of my personality that I need to repair that I'm not aware of because it's still not happening, you know? But something else I've learned is life is always about learning more about yourself, learning how to grow, how to move forward. And that doesn't stop once you're married. That doesn't stop once you're in a relationship. That's something you're doing as a single person and as a dating person and as a married person, as, you know, a parent someday. It's a consistent thing in life, but for some reason it's very highlighted on those who are single, of like, oh, take advantage of these years, do all these things. And I'm like, I want to live my whole life, a full life, all the years of my life, not just in these segmented parts, you know?
That made me think of something, because that's a really good point. A lot of us, or a lot of my friends and I, would kind of hold back on doing things, or we would look at different milestone developments or like personal growth as, oh, that'll benefit me as a partner in the future or whatever. And we sort of held back from living a really rich life because we have this idea that that rich life starts with your marriage one day, when instead you could bring your rich life into that marriage. Because you said something like that doesn't change. And I thought, oh my gosh, one thing that I knew in my head, but I didn't realize until I got married, was that no switch flips and life suddenly, you are no different. You know, when you get married, you bring your past into it, you bring your life into, and you join with someone else. So I'm glad that I went ahead and traveled, and, or like, I think a lot of women hold back in buying a home or just different things. Cause, oh, how is that going to affect me when I get married? You can figure that stuff out. But if you live the rich life, the richest life or the fullest life you can, you will bring what you gained from that into your marriage. And then if you don't get married, you have a badass, awesome life that is filling your heart and your soul.
Well, and I'll speak to the side of it, right? From having been married twice and experiencing very lonely marriages, married to people where it was unhappy and very lonely and awful and abusive and all of those things. And so you get to a place when you're later in life and you're single too, if you've had divorce or those things in your past, where you think to yourself, my life by myself is good and it's worth being alone until somebody can come along and complement that life that's already in place, because I already have community. I have friends. I have fullness. I have a great job. I have the things that, you know, that I want to pursue, trips, things with, you know, people that you just want to live life fully. And until somebody can really complement that and you can come together and be a team, it's worth waiting and holding out, because you don't want to be, there's nothing worse than being married and being lonely. I mean, that is just an awful, awful, I mean, it's almost worse from doing both in my 20s and 30s, it's worse being married and being lonely than being lonely and just being alone. So I learned really quick in my 30s that I had to really like decide what was important for who I was going to be with, because I needed that to be an addition to my life, right? This partnership that God did design and create it for, not just, I think, in the church or how I was raised, was that partnership or that marriage was going to be the epitome of like, bring the best of you out, right? This is just going to like bring fulfillment on a level, which it does, but also you should be fulfilled in who you are of your own life, your own singleness, the things that you've created and built for yourself without a partner. That should matter just as much as it matters to have a partner.
Your marriage and your life will be that much richer. That's what I was trying to say. For it. And if you spend all this time waiting, you actually have less to bring into that life. They're coming in to complement it. I think the way I've worded it before is it's better to be single and free than to be married or stuck with the wrong person. Or someone that you realize makes you feel alone.
Yeah.
And I think Sarah and I think we used to say this, I'm pretty sure it was us, but we used to say that I still say this because I'm single, like I love my life, and a man that I'm going to end up being with needs to, like you're saying, Serenity, add to that. Mm-hmm. Not worth it for me to give up my life to be with somebody who's not just going to add to it, you know? And that's just, you know, knowing your value and your worth and all of that. It's also tied in to the way that you live your life as well. Because the person that's stepping in, he's got to make it better.
Right.
I love my life. So I've had people throughout the years who are like, I don't know why you're still single, or is dating like really that hard? And I'm like, yeah, actually it is. Like, especially when they're like, how many dates I've gone on? Cause you know, I'm on the dating apps and things, and they'll hear like, oh, you went on like 20 dates last year, none of them stuck. Nope.
Well, and the reality is finding somebody really isn't that hard. You can go on any dating website. There's a bajillion people to choose from, but finding somebody of quality, yes, that's going to add to your life and has the same values and thoughts and morals and wants to live life the way that you do, that's what's hard. It's not finding somebody. I mean, let's just be really honest. That's not hard to do.
Finding the somebody.
Yeah, it's just the value of what you hold and deem important to you. And when the older you get, I think the more you understand and realize what that is and what you're willing to hold out for. So you might seem like you're maybe too stringent or strict on your, you know, what you have in mind for what you want. But the reality is you're just getting a better idea of who you are and what's more valuable to you and important to you and what you're not willing to compromise on.
Yeah. And it was interesting for me. I don't know if you guys had this experience, but I feel like the script kind of flipped when I like entered into my 30s, because when I was in my 20s, you know, all of the church women would be like, hold out for the right guy, don't compromise, you deserve the absolute best. And now I'm like in my 30s and they're like, are you being too strict?
Right. You're picky. You're too picky.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it does.
Are you?
Yeah.
I never thought of that before. That's so true.
It is. It's 100% true.
And I'm like, my value has not changed now that I'm just, you know, a little bit older. If anything, I know myself even better. Right. And so like you're saying, Serenity, I know what I'm looking for. I know the kind of man that I'm worthy of, and I know how I want to be treated and all of that. And so, yeah, maybe I am a little bit pickier, but I'm happy with it.
With good reason. Yeah.
I think the older we get, like you're saying, the better we know ourselves. And the less willing we get to possibly risk messing up a good thing. We managed to build a life we love. I think that was one thing that actually gave me a lot of reassurance about Kirk, is both of us told each other, hey, like, we both have a good life. We're not in a hurry to mess with that. And I think something we wanted to talk about is how churches can approach it better. Because I know that everyone means well. So I don't want to say they're doing it wrong, but so many times, Serenity, you made this point when we were having our little planning chat last week, and that's that many times if churches do mention singleness, it's like we're going to have a little aside here for you single folk. And, you know, they throw in a quick little word of encouragement or something, or they'll bring someone in or talk about it, but it's someone who's been married a long time. And you made a good point. It might be beneficial for churches to maybe bring in someone who is single now, because it's very different than it was years ago.
I mean, like anything in life, right? Like if you're starting a way, you know, to work out in the gym, or do you think you're going to go to somebody who's doing that now, who has fruit in their life to show for that now? And this is nothing against people who are married young or married a high school sweetheart or anything, or pastors who've been married for 10, 15 years. But listen, the dating world is not the same as it was 10 or 15 years ago. And not that God couldn't still download a great, powerful message to them for singles in their church. But the reality of it is you're going to hear somebody a little bit different who's in the thick of it now than than somebody who lived it 15 years ago and has no idea about the pressures and the reality of being a believer and being in the dating world is these days. Because, you know, I mean, things are all across the board when it comes to morals, standards, what people are willing to do, especially if you get into people who are married, divorced, have children, all these things. You know, you're not holding out because, I mean, let's just be real. This is what I grew up in, because you're a virgin. And so you're holding out for your, you know what I mean? Like, that's just not the reality. And so I think if your church has this huge demographic these days of people who are later in life and single, maybe married or divorced, but aren't college age anymore, but in their, you know, 30s and 40s and don't have a place to like be, there's, you know, young marrieds, there's seniors classes at churches, there's all these things. But what about that age group that's just not being spoken to or ministered to? That's really sad to me because it's huge. It's a big group these days. I know more people like that, just as many as I do married. So where are we missing that? Why is that not heavier on pastors' hearts to speak to that group and to speak into them?
I wonder if it's because it's kind of snuck up on everybody, because now here we are going, looking around and going, oh, wait, there's many of us in our 30s and 40s that either just got married or aren't yet.
Yeah.
And I think even the church is going, oh, this is here we are, you know?
Yeah. And I don't want to like devalue the fact that there is wisdom in going to people who have gone ahead, you know, being like, oh, you have a healthy marriage. Like, I would want to learn from somebody like that. But I do think that is part of that subtle message of, oh, as a single person, I don't have as much value because I can't sit on the stage and talk about dating or relationships because I haven't achieved the ultimate relationship of marriage. But the fact of the matter is, like, as single women and single men, we hold a lot of wisdom. We hold a lot of experience in all different kinds of relationships, including dating relationships. And I think there is a place for us to speak into that and still provide encouragement and wisdom, even if we haven't reached that ultimate goal. And again, I think that's where the subtle messaging comes in. It might not be what's being preached from the stage, but when you don't see yourself represented
right
on stage, and then they're telling you how this is how it should be done if you want to get to this place, there's this disconnect that's like, I don't actually feel seen and known in this space, you know?
It's so true. And there is so much value to married couples speaking into it. I would agree. I mean, I'm sure like you guys too, there's so many married couples you're around and you're like, I want a marriage that, you know, I see how they communicate. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's something I can really want for myself. Because by example, totally, that's so valuable. But mm-hmm. I think the balance is just a little off sometimes when it comes to valuing, like you said, a single's perspective, the balance just seems to kind of lean one way.
And you're just kind of getting the message of, I must still be doing something wrong because I haven't found the one yet. So I'm still doing something wrong. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, what I've learned in all of my years of dating is I really do believe that when you meet the person that you're meant to like marry and spend your life with, that it clicks in a way. And I know people have all different opinions on that. But I mean, even in the more long-term relationship that I was in, it felt different than other dating relationships I've been in. And so I know that when it's the right person, there's a different level of connection there that you can't just force with anyone.
It's kind of like all of life, living as, and I know that some people listening to this may not be a Christian. So I'm speaking to other Christians. It's like anything that you believe God has his hand on. And I don't necessarily believe that there is one, like we have a soulmate, you know, kind of thing. But when you are walking in blessing, when there is a grace over it, just like anything, if it's a new job or a move or a big life decision or anything, when God gives us the okay, there is a different ease about it. And when it comes to choosing a partner and knowing, you know, there is, I do believe God has an ideal. He has this would be a smooth road for you kind of thing. Not that, you know, any marriage is going to be without difficulty or imperfection, but it's just a smoother path.
Yeah.
And you can feel the difference.
There's peace behind it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I know like I dated nice guys that are happily married now with beautiful families and they're thriving and they're doing well. They're not bad guys, but I did not have, there was this friction. There was it's not fitting. And while things with Kirk did happen quickly, and as some people are like, some people said, don't you feel you jumped into that a little bit fast? Just like, you know, the last thing. I'm like, you don't know anything about how much smoother this road was than all of the other roads I tried. This propelled itself in the most effortless way.
But also you were at a point where you knew yourself so much better than you did prior to that last, that relationship, you know, the one before, that you were in a place to have a better understanding. So why wouldn't it not take as long? You know, I think that's so funny. The whole timing thing is just funny to me because it's like, you're in a different place, a different space. You've learned so much, your wisdom, your knowledge, your insight, you're learning from hindsight. You know, it's, that makes sense to me that it doesn't always take so long because you are not that person.
Well, and some, yeah, exactly. And sometimes really good things can happen quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From really horrible places.
Yeah.
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 I think just too, like the openness to dating, right? The flexibility and being willing to go and not counting somebody out right away. And, you know, like you and I, Kirk, are with Tracy, having a good sense about it, but wanting to really like be still careful and cautious. And there's goodness to that, but also not shutting things down right away and being open.
Well, I'm curious to know from both of you guys what your experience was in your younger years entering into dating from the Christian world. What were the messages that you had stepping into dating?
Well, you don't mind. I was coming from the whole I kissed dating goodbye. We wore purity rings. And not only did we kiss dating goodbye, we hugged courtship. Oh, no, can't hug. But anyway, we greeted courtship. Hello. Yeah. Side hugged courtship. Hello. With a chaperone really close by. So I was entering dating with the not so subtle mindset of I need to marry the first guy that I seriously date. So it made trying to go down that path of getting to know someone better and better, which means there's more seriousness. And you're like, the further I got down that road, the more anxious I would get because now I'm like, I need to know. Well, how far is too far as getting serious with someone and developing a relationship and calling them my boyfriend, I guess, my suitor, my beau. And then, oops, I don't want to marry them. Well, have I given away too much of my heart? Because I was preached with the whole save your heart for the one. Well, how do I enter into a relationship or how do I get to know someone long enough but don't develop any feelings whatsoever? Yeah. And then decide, oh, they are the one. And now I will flip the feeling switch and fall in love and give you my heart. There is a giving of your heart in the process of dating. So I don't know if my whole early dating years will apply.
Well, I think for me, again, I grew up in a very conservative Christian home too. And I think it was more so just so many people got married right out of high school and found each other so young. And so when I went off to Bible college and it was called bridal college, right? Because that's where you go and you meet your person that you're supposed to marry. So in my mind, I was like, that's what I have to do. I have to go to college and like find my spouse. It's bridal Bible college. This is what you do. So it was just, again, this, like you said, kind of Karen, the subliminal message is just there in the back of your head. It's not necessarily people are shouting in your face or whatever, but that's just kind of your concept of how life is supposed to go, right? I mean, that's just, you know, you get married, you have babies, you live your life, you buy a house, right? All these big things. And we think there's some kind of order to it. So I think I did that. I went and I was, you know, got married really young and did all of those things only to find that following that protocol that had been shown to me my whole life failed. And so I was like, forget this. This is dumb. I did it the way I was supposed to. God, why didn't this work out? You know, divorced at 22. Are you kidding me? There was so much shame, especially as being a believer and in the church, because I didn't know any other 22-year-old divorced people. Not one. I was the only one. And so it's so lonely and you just feel like such a black sheep, you know? So I was like, okay, so we're going to try it my way now because that way did not work clearly. And so I was like, free for all, do whatever you want, doesn't matter. But a lot of that, I think, could have looked differently had I been really, and this isn't a dig on my church or my parents or anybody. I think, you know, whatever did the best they could. But I think what we're missing now is just learning the value of who you are as a person, as an individual, and your value so that you know you have something worth holding your heart out for maybe a little bit, or worth holding out your feelings and your investment and your time, because you've not been taught value in who you are as Christ's woman that he loves and he's so proud of and he treasures you. to seek that out. I was never taught to really seek somebody out who treasured and valued me and treated me, you know, the way that I know Christ wanted that. I was just supposed to find somebody who was a believer and just, you just get on board with that. But that doesn't teach you really anything at all other than just a certain, you know, law or bylaw to follow. And so I think if you understand and start to know your worth, which that took me years to do in my 20s and 30s, that's when I could get more picky dating because I didn't understand that. But lots of counseling will help you.
Yes. I actually went on a first date the other day. So I'm stealing this quote from this guy, but he told me that he was looking for somebody who is willing to like know themselves. He was like, there's something about you want to know your partner, you want to know, you know, your spouse, but he's like, you're not going to be able to get to know somebody if they don't know themselves. I was like, okay.
Was there a second date? Side note.
Well, this was yesterday, so there will be a second date. But yeah, I think that in my younger years, I was just kind of told like, you're not allowed to date. And then I think when I was 16, then I was allowed to maybe like go on a date to prom or something like that. I was never given clear direction, honestly. So it was always church messages and I just wanted to follow the rules. But the one message that I was given is I was told that we trust you, but we don't trust the boys that would want to take you out. And that mess, I didn't realize until I was later on in life how much that messed with me because I was never taught that like I have discernment, that I have judgment, that I can trust my own intuition, my own gut. And so there was a lot of fear in dating, honestly. There's a lot of fear of like, oh my gosh, these guys only want one thing. I can't control that. They're going to be manipulative and controlling of me. And so I need to like hold everybody at arm's length. Again, it wasn't until I started dating more in my later 20s that I learned, okay, I can trust my judgment. I can go on out to coffee with somebody. And if I get a weird feeling, I can just cut them off and say, okay, that was great. Thank you so much. I will not be going on a second date with you. And that's okay. I kind of wanted to jump back to asking that question because I think it does play on those early on messages that we received and how we like first entered into dating. I know for me, it's been years of unraveling that. And I don't regret any part of my story, but I think it could have been very helpful to have some of those things taught at a younger age. Like you're saying, journey of my own value, my own worth, and that I have discernment and I can trust that. I can trust the Lord in me, you know, not going to lead me astray.
As you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, I kind of wish that I know that my parents were coming from a good place. I don't blame them for absolutely anything, but I do wish that I had been given a chance to develop my own discernment when the stakes were a little bit less high. Like when I'm 16 and I know I'm not going to marry this guy. I mean, I might have wanted to, you know, soon, but granted, in my experience, no one actually told me they liked me until I was 18. So I guess I could have gotten married, but I wish it hadn't been treated so seriously. And I think, I was on Instagram having a conversation and I was saying, I kind of compare it to kids growing up around either sex being super, super taboo and never discussed. And oftentimes, then they get curious, or alcohol being forbidden. We don't have it in our home, you know, whereas if they grow up and they see mom and dad modeling balanced approaches to drinking, it's not going to be as mysterious or, you know, fascinating. Well, yeah, we do it casually, you know, kind of thing. Oftentimes those kids grow up most of the time, you know, with a healthy relationship with it. In some ways, I can't help but wonder if dating hadn't instilled such a fear of losing the chance to marry the very first guy I date, or giving too much of myself away, or I don't know, being seen with the wrong guy. Just, I think I don't know if it was my own pride, but the idea of ending something and then having to start over, number one, was exhausting. But number two, everyone would see that, oh my gosh, another one didn't work. I wish I didn't think that was such a big deal if something didn't work out, because that's just not the way life works.
Yeah.
Imagine how much more freeing the dating process would be even at a younger age with all of that pressure removed. Because I agree. I mean, I think it looked different for all three of us, but the same underlying theme is there was a pressure there like you said, Karen, not even a trust factor in yourself and who you can, what you can discern for yourself. And like you said, Sarah, when the stakes are so much less, right? I mean, that's huge. That's, and so if all that pressure is removed and you can kind of explore what that looks like and actually sit down with your kids and talk to them, like, what do you value? What do you think, your teenagers, what do you think is being treated well? What would be an explanation like that for you? How do you think, you know, not just giving you attention, because let's be honest, when you're a teenage girl, you just want attention, right? That's what matters. And so that doesn't really leave us, unfortunately, even into your 20s. That attention feels good. But what really is, who's treating you well? Who's treating you with respect? I think, you know, my dad always really modeled respect to my mom. And so I had good examples of that, but it was never dialogued about. It was never talked about. And I think, you know, being able to talk about that with your teenagers or even 20-year-olds or something is so helpful to be able to get an idea and get in their head and understand what are they viewing as a healthy perspective on relationships and dating and all of that. I mean, those are just conversations that never happened in my house. Not, again, no fault to my parents. They were doing the best they could, but it just didn't happen. And I wish it would have, because I think that might have, that pressure and valuing myself might have made that journey look a lot different.
Yeah. And to maybe instill in them too, that you can come back from anything. Because yeah. I think purity culture raised a lot of us to think that once you've messed up or compromised in any way, that you cannot get that back. And so then it causes us to either A, stay stuck in the wrong situation or relationship for too long because, well, we can't reverse what's happened kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can't go back. Or, well, now, like, you know, I was taught that hearts are like Velcro and they only have so many sticks in them, you know? Yeah. Well, then what do you do if you stepped out and tried to get to know someone and you, oops, gave away part of your heart? What do you do with that? So am I permanently less sticky? And I think also that's why a lot of women, especially friends around our age, stay in relationships because of the fear of starting over or the fear of how much they've already given. And that is, on the outside looking in, you think you're crazy, get out. There is life beyond this. You'll be okay. But when you're in it, your brain doesn't work like that. It's scary.
I mean, there's so much behind that, right? Just stepping away from that kind of connection is difficult. And like you're saying, like when you're in it, it's hard to see. But I think that there's so much value in having, probably not going to sound right, but having failed relationships.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not, I mean, maybe we shouldn't call it a failed relationship. Having relationships that don't end in marriage, I think there's a lot of value in them. I think there's a lot of hope that can come from it, a lot of personal growth. And I don't think it should be something that's discouraged. And I think that
That's a good point.
Again, from a young age, it was kind of, you know, don't lead somebody on, don't. But there's such a, it takes time to kind of feel relationships out. It takes time to get to know somebody. So what is that line of leading somebody on and just getting to know somebody?
Yeah.
I think that everybody's responsible, obviously, for how they're carrying their own heart. And that's all that we can control. But anybody will tell you that relationships are risky, right? Mm-hmm. If we haven't learned that at this point, then I don't know if there's any hope. But I think the point I'm trying to get across is investing in a relationship is, and obviously there's the extremes of abuse. Those are relationships that should never, there's no excuse to be in those situations. But I think in investing in any relationship, any semi-healthy relationship is going to have positive impacts on your life and who you're becoming in some way.
Experience is so invaluable. You know, I think too, again, being at this stage and age of life, I mean, I have friends who have been married since they met in high school. We went to a very small high school, and I love that. I love that they are with the only person they've ever been in love with. That's beautiful. There's beauty in that. There really is. One I don't know or understand, but there is, and I can appreciate that, right? Even though that's not my experience. I will tell you, even like with my husband and I, even at this stage and age of life, I'm like, I so wish I would have met you sooner, but I don't know that we would have been together earlier. because of our experiences. So actually, as much as I wish I could have lived as much life with you as possible, I'm really thankful that we are now, because now I'm at an age where I have friends who have marital problems. Let's be honest, right? And so they've picked this partner at a younger age and they weren't really sure who they were picking. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but I'm saying being later in life, I have a marriage that is really sound because I had some pretty high standards from experience and knew what I wasn't going to allow, what I wasn't going to have in my life, what I wasn't going to settle for, you know? And so Tracy and I have just this very rich relationship, but it is because, like you said, Karen, experience from failed relationships, from failed engagements, marriages, whatever, all of that has played into be who we are, the partners that we are now. And there is so much value to that. So as much as dating sucks, it's also so valuable because it really helps you find whom and what you're looking for. I know it can be so discouraging when you're in the thick of it and you're like, I don't want to go on another first date to save my life. Because it feels like a job interview, like the worst kind ever, over and over and over again. But I mean, if you can go into it with the concept of just this could help me to be better for my future person and vice versa, it's so worth it because then you really get to be in a relationship that just makes sense for who you are later in life based off your experiences.
Yeah. And even just, yeah, for, I love that you said that, Serenity, because I think everybody's story is so different. So there are people who, like you're saying, were married, you know, high school sweethearts. It's their one true love, always and forever. And I think that's the message, is that everybody's story is so different. And so there's not more value in one than the other.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that, yeah, there's people who got married young who are go through marital issues at different stages of life. But even those stories, they're still beautiful because there's always growth and redemption for individuals and for couples and all of that. And I think every dating relationship makes me, it opens my mind and my perspective to different people. I feel like it makes me kinder. It makes me like.
And confidence, I would say, yeah. Knowing personally, your confidence level now and back when I knew you when you were first dating is changed. I mean, night and day in who you are as a female and what you have to bring. Your confidence level is just so beautiful and so desirable, you know, for the right guy, for whoever that person's going to be. It's changed. And that's based on your experience because you have put yourself out there and you've done the hard, uncomfortable stuff over and over and over and over.
Yeah. And it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of doing things that are very uncomfortable.
True. That's a good point. I mean, I've only known you, what, like several years, but you do carry yourself differently.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It was something I was thinking of is I think what it boils down to for me is I had been taught to fear heartbreak. And I'm not talking, you know, again, abusive relationships and situations are different. I'm not talking about escaping something like that. But I was taught to fear heartbreak. When looking back, those were situations that deepened me as a human. And I'm glad that I had each time of sadness and mourning and grieving the loss of maybe some hope of a dream of what maybe could have been, you know, or maybe it wasn't that I was grieving the relationship. I was just, I think, grieving a dream sort of, or a hope of maybe this could be, and it wasn't, and it's fine. It shouldn't have been. I'm glad it wasn't, you know, for every relationship that didn't work out. But yeah, I became kinder and more compassionate. And I think a little more humble with each thing that didn't work out. Cause I started to realize that there is no right way to do this.
Yeah.
I told myself years ago, I had been set up for success. I think that was my downfall, was telling myself way that I'm going to do this right. That made sure that it was going to be a shit show.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah.
Thinking we got this down. We got this.
Crash and burn.
That reminds me, I don't remember which one of you said this in our last convo, but there is no right way to be single. And someone, I've been asked before, how did you handle your single years and how did you keep perspective? And I was like, sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I did. Yep. Sometimes I was feeling strong. I got this. I'm glad I'm not with anyone, you know, and it could be the very next day where something would hit me and I think, oh shoot, I'm losing time. Or I wish I could have shared this with someone, or I'd book a trip and go, wow, this is going to be awesome. Ooh, I really wish there was someone there with me. You know, I guess I'll just have to repeat it again one day when I'm married, you know, that kind of stuff. You flip flop.
Touching on like heartbreak, I think that walking through that also just teaches you resilience in life. And, you know, I used to think I would die if my heart was broken. And I, I would not wish it upon anyone. When you're going through it, it's rough, it's hard. But I think the greatest thing that it taught me is that life is really about that tension of knowing how to grieve and still hold hope. I feel like that's every
yeah, that's my whole life.
Season of life. Yeah.
That's going to be a quote.
Yeah. And it's such a hard tension to hold. It's so hard to like tell yourself that it's okay to grieve and have hope. And I think that's a great thing for even people in the church to understand, because I think that sometimes as a single person, they'll look at you, or the feeling that you get sometimes is that you're being pitied because you're still single. And that, I think you mentioned this early on, Sarah, that you're just sitting around pining and waiting for that day for your Prince Charming to arrive. And the fact of the matter is, yes, that is something that I grieve on some days, that I'm sad about that. I would love for that to be in my life at this point. But I still have a lot of hope. And I think sometimes it's hard for people to understand that you can have both.
Literally at the same time. Yeah. They can like coexist together.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a lot of times when I'm feeling sad or just maybe a little bit down, I don't actually need the encouragement of, oh, he's coming soon, or, oh, you're amazing, you deserve the best. I'm like, I know all that, you know, because I still have hope. But in that moment when I'm feeling down, what I'm looking for, if I'm sharing that with somebody, is just to be like, I know it's hard, you know, somebody to just like sit with me in that moment and being like, I know it's hard, and just being in there. You don't have to have the right Bible verse or the right word of encouragement for that person in your life who might be feeling down, because it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have hope. It just means that they're human, and we all have a range of emotions that are healthy and good to acknowledge and not ignore.
I mean, you know, that's so near and dear to my heart. Because so let's just say you get married and the thought or process is that life's going to be happy and it's going to be good. Oh, but then you don't talk about infertility and the grief that comes with that. And then we foster and the grief that comes with that. And then there's all these things in life that happen even after you get married that are very hard. So if you can learn grieving and having joy and hope all in the same on your own, as your own individual, as your own person, then you're going to be able to probably do that a lot more beautifully with a partner, you know, in life, because other things are going to come your way. Being single isn't the worst thing in the world. Yeah. Even though it feels like it when you're in it, it's not, you know, because there's just going to be so many other things that come in life that come at you. And like you said, I mean, you have to be able to be in a place where you can just be heard and seen, and not be so quick to comfort or give you words of encouragement. Because you know what? That's kind of like the last thing you want to hear when you're in it, and when you're hurting, and when you're frustrated, and when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of being single, and just over the work that it takes and the investment of heart, emotion, time, all of that. The last thing you want to be is encouraged on, which sounds so opposite of what we think. Yeah. But in church, that's just what we're kind of taught, and to, you know, speak life into something. Well, how about we just speak reality into what it is? It's just as hard, like you said, and that's okay. And I'm really sorry that it must be really lonely. That just feels so much more real than trying to give you some, you know, Christian easy statement that doesn't really help in the moment. And so for somebody just to see your heart, that's so valuable in the middle of your grief. Because like you said, as an individual, as a person, yes, you have hope. You have a hope for your life. That's why you keep doing this, right? That's why you keep crying. It's because you do ultimately have hope, and you keep getting up every day and you keep doing the hard things. So I think that all has its place and proper timing. But I think when people are just in the midst of hurt and grief, even in singleness, because there is a lot of grief that people don't even talk about, that, you know, the holidays, right? Because holidays are really highlighted so beautifully when you're single. And, you know, different things like that. And you're just like, man, if somebody could just acknowledge how lonely this is, that would feel so much more comforting than to be told some other cliche thing that we're all guilty of, myself included. I mean, we all have done that and been there. And then once you live in it, you're like, I'm not going to say those things anymore, because that did not help one bit.
It almost makes you, I think, to be encouraged in the middle of feeling a ton of grief makes you feel like, well, they're telling me reasons I shouldn't be feeling this, basically.
Yeah.
And just to be told that it's okay to be really upset or to be really sad somehow makes it better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It is.
which again is another lesson that you learn through just moving through life and relationship and heartbreak. And something I learned is like, I don't need those words of encouragement, but if you want to bring me a meal,
yeah. right?
That
my buddy like, a yeah, coffee.
Like if you yeah. showed up with a meal, I would be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
At least I got good friends.
yeah.
So true.
But I mean, when you walk through those seasons, it also teaches you, I think, how to be a better friend. Mm. I've apologized to several of my friends who went through heartbreaks before I did. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I did not show up for you in yeah. these ways because I didn't know what that felt like. And now I'm quick to take a meal to a friend.
I was going to say, maybe we should start a trend where meal trains happen that. For yeah. fresh breakups.
Yeah. yeah. It's so true. Because why wouldn't that be catered to or tent? You know, because it's being single and going through that is so lonely and so hard. And why don't we just show up like that and just be like, hey, I just want to sit with you. I'm going to bring you coffee or your favorite treat or whatever you need.
Meal train.
And just be there with you. Yeah. yeah. I love that. That's such a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, because honestly, that is something else that can be a struggle there. And it's not to take away from these celebrations, because I think that these are all things that happen in life that are so worth being celebrated, you know, like a marriage or in a baby. You should have showers. You should get all of the gifts. But if I'm being honest, like I'm, you know, in my mid-30s and I'm like, man, when do I get my KitchenAid?
yeah, for sure.
I'm like, I've been waiting a while for my, you know, my gift registry.
I yep. think you should do a gift registry for your next birthday. Just do yeah. it. Just do a gift registry for your birthday and be like, here, guys, send an invite.
I'm like, guys, I would love a KitchenAid. you know, that really nice vacuum.
You're building right? your own kitchen on your own. This is yeah. every Christmas, every birthday.
yes, I'm slowly like adding. I'm slowly adding. And I know everybody's life situations are different with all of that stuff. But I'm like, man, what are ways we can incorporate celebration, supporting each other as individuals? Because that's another just underlying message of, okay, you're married. Now you are like worthy to establish home.
Or celebrating even like, hey, you broke up with a really toxic relationship. Yay, you. Like, let's have a party.
Yeah.
you know, I'm so proud of you. You saw your worth.
I've had friends who bought a home and we did do like a gift registry for them because they're still single, but they just bought a whole home. That's a big thing to celebrate. And I actually, one of my friends celebrated me like when I got back on a dating app after my heartbreak.
I love that.
She was just like, hey, I'm bringing over a bottle of champagne. This is a big step for you.
It is.
And it is those little things that I think are just so worth celebrating.
Yeah.
And in every season of life, I'm not just saying for single people, but to just have a broader view of the individuals in your life and how you can show up for them, how you can celebrate them is so helpful in every season of life. But I think especially when you are single, because you don't have that partner who's seeing all of those steps with you on the day to day. So having those strong female friendships, I know for me, have been just such a huge blessing in my life.
Yeah, I was thinking, man, how could we apply this to men? Because well, they struggle as well. We didn't want to leave them out. So maybe they can bring each other a beer.
yeah, that's true. It's true.
Yeah.
I know we talked about this last week, but even just at Christmas, we were back home in California and my husband had his friend over and he pulled out his dating app and was like, let's see what it looks like. I want to know what it looks like from the guy's end. Are the pickings really just as slim as we think it is for us? And yeah. About 2-3, maybe even 4 hours of scrolling later, I was like, good night. You guys can do this on your own. It was rough.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we know a couple of single guys who they had the exact same struggle, same situation. So it's universal. Maybe that is a whole different discussion of why. Why is this happening? But
yeah, it's a really interesting, I mean, I think that is opening a whole nother can of worms if we're going to get into the dating culture that we've created with apps and all of that. It's definitely on both sides where it's much more difficult to find true connection. The internet, our phones, all of that, that are just making it harder for people to find healthy attachment with other humans.
Yeah.
I think that plays into why a lot of us are getting married later in life, because it's taken us a little while to figure that out.
Yeah, I think so. Serenity, you made a good point. Like last week where you were talking about how rather than sitting back and waiting, there is importance in recognizing that nothing of value or worth is going to just show up on our doorstep. And I think sometimes it's easy to think, well, we're going to sit back and scroll this app, you know, on our couch.
Yeah.
But it's harder now to find, well, I think back then people just met, well, they had to, they didn't have the internet, but they would maybe meet at church, or they would meet at work or through friends and things like that. But we're so siloed, I think, now in our little communities and little lives and everything, that our options have slimmed. It is not mm-hmm. that easy to meet someone at church.
It's shifted so much. It's like, that doesn't even seem like an option a lot anymore. I mean, not that it doesn't still happen where people meet organically. I mean, Karen is a poster child for that. She's so great at that because she's so social and True. She did that so much. And I, you know, in my single years, I would have considered myself social too, but I just never mm-hmm. met people. People would say to me, go to Home Depot and hang out there. I'm not going to hang out at Home Depot. What the heck? I mean, I did for work, but I wasn't just going to go up and down the aisles strolling looking for somebody who didn't have a ring on. What? Oh, what is that God. Advice even?
Looking cute.
That's how I'm going to meet somebody organically? That is not realistic.
That's a little bit of your creeper vibes.
Right? It's so, but that, I can't tell you how many times people would tell me that, you know, or just go where they are. And I do understand that. But like, yeah, I mean, like we were talking about last week, any relationship that has value in your life, you work for, right? It's not going to just happen. And maybe you're in a season of life where you don't feel like you can actively go and date. And that's fine. I remember taking so many breaks from online dating, just being like, oof, done, off, take them all down, need a break, need a breather. That's totally normal, healthy, good. That makes sense. But then also there has to be part of you who's willing to put yourself out there. If it's not online dating, then in some other way, shape, or form, like groups that do like activities together or hiking groups or whatever that is. But if you're not at least putting yourself out there, that person's not just going to show up and deliver you a pizza and that's the end of the story. Our relationship, even with the Lord, takes work. It takes conversation. It takes dialogue. It takes effort. It takes me reading his word. It takes me talking to him. It takes me being real and vulnerable. And so any relationship that we want and have, and especially a marriage that has, you know, this person that you're spending the rest of your life with on such an intimate level, if you're not willing to get out there and do some of the hard work, unfortunately, it's not going to just happen.
Yeah.
And I know we don't want to hear that.
No, I know.
We love E.T.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just side note, which is funny. Where did you end up meeting Tracy?
Online. Yeah. But so we were going to church, the same church, right? A very kind of, you know, more hip, modern church, not super old school. And we were going to church every Sunday, sitting underneath the same roof. Never would have met each other, but we met online. And then after talking, realized we were going to the same church. It's like, okay, so what happened there? Why wasn't there something in the church, something they were doing or, you know, helping minister to, you know, people of our age group to meet each other? That wasn't mm-hmm. possible. And so that's disappointing and sad. Again, I don't fault the church. It is hard. It has changed a lot now, like you said, Sarah, with just age and demographics and all of that. Now they're realizing it more. But I mean, we did meet online, which was, you know, the last place. And in my mind, one of the worst sites possible you could meet somebody.
That's why I asked. And that's why I thought it's hilarious. As you're saying, basically you're saying, be willing to cast your net. Why? Yeah. And you used Christian Mingle. And I just think that is hilarious.
The word. And, you know, and so we say that I casted my net. And in that, I think it's important that you're trusting the Lord with that casting, right? Because you're like, Lord, give me the discernment. So it's not just to all put yourself out there. It's like, give me discernment and who I'm going to reach out to, who I'm going to talk to, our conversation. And in that, I remember even sitting and talking to Karen about this when we worked together every day, I would always tell her, you know what? I always say to myself, for online dating, if you need some encouragement in that area, because it is the biggest way to meet people these days, is it only takes one email, one interaction, one date. It only takes one. So when you're feeling really discouraged, I mean, it was me who sent him a little nudge, but I hadn't paid for the membership yet. And he sent me an email and I was like, dang it, I got to pay $39.99 just to see his dumb email. And so we joke, like, it's the best $39.99 I ever spent because I got to read his email and we went on a date, you know, but it only took one interaction to change the whole trajectory of my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you're discouraged, it's just like, man, it could be one meeting. It could be one time that changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's so good, Serenity, that it's also okay to take breaks. And that comes back to like knowing yourself, trusting yourself. there's been times I've been online where I know this is not good for me mentally right now.
Not in a good headspace.
Yeah, I'm not in a good headspace. I'm feeling very discouraged. Or there's been times in the past where I'm like, I feel like I'm dehumanizing these people because I'm just swiping through people. I don't ever want my mind to look at these people as not human.
Yeah, that's so good.
And so I've stopped myself. I'm like, okay, I need a break. I've gotten too deep into this world and I need a break. And so I think that it's just really important when you are in the dating world to have check-ins with yourself and know what is good and healthy for yourself. I went through a really hard breakup last year. It's been a little bit over a year now. And I didn't get back online until we broke up in January. I didn't get back online until about November. And when I went back on the app, I just told myself that I'm only going to be on here as long as I feel hope. If this is stealing my hope, it's not worth it for me to be pushing in this way right now. And I've taken a couple breaks the last couple months. I've been on it, you know, the last couple months and gone on dates and all of that. And that's the question I ask myself. Is this instilling hope in me or like taking it away?
That's so good. Keeping yourself in check with the Lord about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I think that there's probably different questions that we could all ask ourselves, you know, to check in on ourselves and when we're in the dating world. But that's the question I've been asking myself because I want to do things that are always bringing encouragement and hope, you know, and not bringing more disappointment and discouragement.
Just a positive thing in your life. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, again, something I need to check in with myself about and can't really get from anybody else, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate that you, I mean, even when we were roommates, I remember you being very open-minded as to who you were going to go see and even giving a second, you know, sometimes third date, you put your boots on the ground and went and met people. And I remember at a point we wanted to make today, Serenity, you mentioning as well that even your first impression of Tracy, you yeah. have to tell yourself to keep an open mind. And I think some people will just, we've talked a lot about knowing your worth and not settling. And at the same time, it's funny because both, you know, you and I happened to marry people that at first we had a lot of questions. And so there yeah. was a little bit of that push and pull kind of balancing act of being willing to take risks and go far enough to get those questions answered before you make that decision. And
so
that's part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is such a, you know, interesting thing because you really have to, I think a lot of that came too from just being guarded. So Tracy would tell you I was very guarded when we first met from all of the life experience, so call it, if you want to call it that, you know, and so thankfully he was patient enough to wait that out with me too and see what that looked like because I was really guarded. I'm sure I wasn't my best for him at that moment because I was so guarded and didn't want to be hurt and didn't want to go down a rabbit hole again. But because of his patience and getting time to understand and learn and know him, I mean, I think it's also really important to know, I had an idea of who I wanted and, you know, I laid out before the Lord, had written out some things that I felt were important of value in a partner, and the Lord exceeded those. So he knows even better than what we think we know for ourselves. I thought I knew what I needed, and to a certain extent, I did. But I mean, Tracy has traits and attributes about him that are so much more than I could have even prayed or asked for myself because God knows me so well. And so, you know, I think you have to hold that a little bit loosely. I think sometimes I did this myself. So that's why I'm saying that I had in my such an idea in my head of what I wanted and who I wanted to be with that I kind of held on to it with a death grip sometimes. And so I think it's important to have an idea, but also holding it so openly in your hand and surrendering that to the Lord to say, I'm also open to what you're willing to bring into my life and whom you're willing to bring in because you know me best. You fashioned me together. You know who I need and what I need, and trusting that and that the Lord's going to provide that for you because ultimately he knows that's how you're going to be a team and work together, you know, as well as you do because he knows what we need even more than we do. And he will do that. He wants that for us. He's not out to put us in a relationship that makes us miserable, you know, or unhappy. His heart is for single people just as it is married people. It's, you know, it's no difference. And I think that's the kind of the hard messaging we get to sometimes. Like, yes, God's heart is for marriage and he loves that union and that partnership, but it's also for singles. His heart is the same. His heart beats the same and he wants the best for us and he wants us to be treated really well. and he wants us to treat each other well, but both ways. This, I'm not saying all this just from like a, you know, women should be respected. I'm like, no, I need to respect him as my husband too, and hold him in high value and respect who he is and what he's been through in his past and his history and what he's experienced and the heartbreak he's had and who's made him who he is. I mean, it's not just all the woman's side of it. So I think just holding that so loosely, the Lord, because he knows best.
I'm like, yes.
Just shaking our heads. Yes, yes, yes.
I feel like I would just be repeating the same thing because I had a very similar experience. There were questions in my mind. I'd go, well, okay, but he has this mannerism. What does that mean? Where did that come from? Kind of thing. And now where we are, there are so many times where I've thought, oh, I didn't even think to ask you about this. Oh my gosh, thank goodness you have this quality, or we're on the same page, or you feel the same way about this part of what we want to do with our family, you know, in the future or anything like that. There are just so many things. And I thought I had a laundry list. There are so many things I didn't even think to add. And thank goodness, because you cannot control every single aspect. You can't have every single teeny tiny minuscule box checked. So I had to figure out what are my biggest, biggest boxes that I will not let go unchecked. And then hold the rest very loosely, you know, not knowing exactly, you know, how that would look. And I'm so glad that, you know, it worked out the way that it did. But there was a little bit of kind of that panic mode at the beginning of, oh, I don't want this to be like the other times. I don't want the, you know, and I remember my boss telling me, who was a therapist, we're not doing worst case scenario. You got to stop.
Oh, that's good.
We're not doing worst case scenario. And I think this will apply to our conversation too. I kept saying, I just want to make sure I do it differently. And she'd go, you already are. You can't help but do it differently because you're not who you were last time. You're going to do this one differently. And if this one doesn't work out, you're going to do the next one differently because of what you've gained from this one. And it just took away all the fear of, oh, it's okay to date again. It's okay if I date again and it doesn't work out, it's okay.
Yeah.
And that was just very freeing.
I mean, you're still in it, Karen. So is there like facets of it that you feel like, I mean, just being very honest from having been married 5 years now, is there facets about it you feel we haven't touched on that are just very real that you deal with on a daily basis?
That's a good question.
I mean, oh gosh. Yeah, there's so much.
I know.
I guess one thing I would want to say is something that's been helpful for me, and just a good reminder, is the fact that I'm single is not my identity. It's a current status of my life, but statuses are change. And I think that's that hope aspect of like knowing that that can change and not taking it on as an identity. But I think what has really helped me in my mid-30s and still dating and all that and still hoping for marriage is, and I think I said this early on too, but it's just pursuing the fullness of my life, not dating. And that's where, honestly, when I've been on the apps and I've not been in a healthy mindset, it's usually because I'm a little bit too fixated on
consuming.
Yeah. I'm like, I want to be in a relationship. I want to be married. I'm like, okay, I can see this is not a good time for me to be on a dating app because I'm a little bit too fixated on it right now. And so I think just finding that balance, knowing that it's okay for me to take risks in other areas of my life. I think I've held back in that a lot in the past because I'm like, well, I don't have a partner to fall back on if this doesn't work out. And so
it's like you do that unknowingly almost, right? Like you just naturally make that decision and you don't even realize that's why you're holding out, not making that decision or doing that thing.
Yeah. And so it's honestly that specific thing is something that I have been learning just in the past couple of years. I can step out and take risks and be okay, even though I don't have a partner. Like, I have community. I have, you know, family that they would be there for me if I really needed something, but it's okay to take risks in my career. It's okay to move across the country by myself, to try different things and do different things that, if I'm being honest, I never wanted to do alone. I always wanted to do those things with a partner. But when I have stepped out and done them by myself, it just adds more richness and fullness to my life. And so it's something I wish I would have learned a little bit sooner. But I'm really grateful for every step of the way. And so if that's an encouragement or a word I can share with somebody who's, you know, 5, 6, 10 years behind me. And if I'm being honest too, I feel like that is probably encouragement people gave me when I was younger, but it just didn't click for me.
Yeah.
And now that I am like where I am in life right now, I just want to continue moving forward in that way. And so, yes, dating is a part of my life. I'm going to continue holding out hope for that, but it's not my identity or something that I'm fixated on in my life. And for me, that's a really healthy, it's been a really healthy, good balance. But I know everybody's different. So
I think that's amazing. And I think that is the encouraging note that I kind of would like this episode or this conversation to end on. Because I think ultimately, we talked about this before, it's easy to talk about all of the hard parts of being single or the way the church is handling or not handling it and things. But in the end, I want to end on an encouraging note and let, you know, women and guys know listening to this that there is so much life to be lived and that it is not their identity. Mm. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to feel it. And I think a lot of us are told a lot of things when we're young, but everything's different when you're living it. And so something might hit different 5, 10, 12 years later.
Yeah, I always think back to that. It's so corny, but you know, that Jerry Maguire, when he says, you complete me to what's her name, that movie, right? And I remember hearing that a long, long time ago and thinking how important it is to be complete in and of your own self and person to be with somebody else, right? Because no relationship, marriage, friendship, relationship, marriage, anything is going to complete you. You and of yourself with your relationship with Christ are complete on your own. And so again, at the end of the day, like you said, Sarah, ending on a positive note, is marriage a beautiful, wonderful gift? It is. But I still think I know people who have been single still and might be the majority of their life, and they can still have a really full, beautiful life. It, there might be facets of it they don't get to experience, but that doesn't make it less than. And so life can be so amazing and good even on your own, because no person is ever going to complete you. You are complete in and of yourself. Mm-hmm. And thank God for that, right? We don't need anybody to complete us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I do want to say is kind of to go along with that, because we keep saying like how the church is responding to this, how the church is handling this. And I think there is a part of me that I've also kind of sat back and waited for the church to see me or to call me up, you know, be like, oh, you're a leader. Oh, you're this. Oh, you're that. And something that I've realized is I can actually pursue those areas of ministry, those areas of leadership that kind of like dating, like those things that I would love to be involved in, but I feel like I haven't been seen because I'm just the single girl. Like some of that, the messages that we take on for ourselves is kind of what I'm trying to say. We're looking to the church or leadership to validate us where we're at, but we can also step out in confidence and pursue the things that are on our heart. And I think it's when you start taking those steps, you see that some of those underlying messages are sometimes deeper inside of us than they are actually
happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like an internal dialogue that we've created.
Yes.
And are now living by. It's and true.
Now we're like this self-fulfilling prophecy of, I can't be in that leadership role if I'm single. I can't do these different things if I'm single. And I'm like, well, if I'm being honest, I also haven't stepped out and tried. So it's an internal message that I need to challenge inside myself.
That's so good.
That is really good. And thank you both. I feel like that's just not even enough. I know you've given not just this afternoon, but last weekend. I'm just really honored and thankful to even have a couple people that I could call on with such varied experiences, but with such wise and level perspective too. I'm willing to be honest and I guess just willing to be honest and vulnerable. I think both of you have carried yourselves so well and just with a lot of grace in multiple situations. And I wish that more people could see your life on a day-to-day basis. So I was almost like, well, how could I not share them at least in my podcast, if not, you know, in other conversations. So
I appreciate it, even being on it. Cause honestly, like I love talking to people that are still single or whatever. My heart is just so there still, even though I'm married, you know, like when you've lived and it's hard and you know the hardness of that, like anything in life you go through, you just have a different pull to those people and your heart is for them still. And it's like, man, and just for them to feel so seen, I get it. And I know it's hard, but like you guys said, there is hope because God wants that for us. And so I love being a part of the conversation to give hope because there is.
It's so hard to narrow down the gold nuggets that Karen and Serenity dropped, but a couple of my favorites were that our current relationship status shouldn't define us. A status changes, an identity does not. And like Serenity said, there is nothing worse than being married and being lonely. So it's worth waiting and holding out until someone can come along and complement your already full life. Life does not begin when you find someone to share it with. Buy the house, apply for the job, take the trip, adopt the dog. Just don't put anything off for when you're married. Thank you for being here, for subscribing, and for coming along with me as I learn the world of podcasting and this community has taken shape. It has been an honor to share these stories and conversations with you. If you found any value at all in what you've heard, it would mean the world if you took a moment to write it in a review. Reviews are gold for podcasters. If you'd like to help sustain this project, hop over to buymeacoffee.com/space and purpose, and all contributions go directly to supporting the ongoing costs of this podcast. If you can relate to any of the stories you've heard so far due to an experience with a manipulative or toxic person, and you feel your story would help heal someone else, you can still reach out to me about possibly sharing it. While I am currently pausing sharing new stories, I plan to jump back in as soon as I finished writing my book. You can send me a short summary at spaceandpurpose@gmail.com. Last but not least, if you found this episode to be impactful, you will always make my day by posting about it in your Instagram stories and tagging me at spaceandpurpose. I would love to hear from you.